Let's pick back up our story of the coronation of the very young king, Jehoash, of the southern kingdom of Judah. You remember that his grandmother was Athaliah, the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel up in the northern kingdom of Israel, and that when she saw that her son, Ahaziah, had been killed by the new king Jehu in the north, she immediately wiped out all of her own grandkids down in the south and seized the throne for herself. She becomes the usurper queen for 6 years. And she missed one because of the sovereign work of God. One baby boy, Jehoash by name, was rescued by his aunt, who was a daughter of Queen Athaliah. And because this aunt was also a wife of the high priest, they secreted the young princeling away in the temple complex. And when he was old enough to read and write and speak relatively well, Jehoiada, his uncle, the high priest, gathered together a whole bunch of people across Judah to declare him the king. And he makes sure that it's all going to happen on a Sabbath day, where he's got both the priests and Levites going off duty and the priests and Levites coming on duty. Now, I'm of the opinion it's actually happening on the first day of the seventh month, which happened to be a Sabbath day in this particular year, 846 BC. So the last thing that we saw was that Jehoiada the high priest had everybody gather into the worship plateau of the Temple Mount as priests and Levites surrounding the young man, the boy that is going to be the king, and the worshipers are down below in the lower courtyard watching all of this happen. And so I want to pick up in 2 Chronicles 23, verse 11. Then they brought out the king's son, and they put the crown on him. Somehow they got a hold of the Davidic crown, and gave him the testimony, which that would be a reference to the Word of God. At least the book of Deuteronomy, which we know that according to Moses' directions, each king was supposed to make a handwritten copy under the direction of the priests that he would then use for the rest of his life to read from day by day and govern according to its dictates. So that's probably what he's holding, either the thing he's going to copy or the thing that Jehoiada already had him copy. And then they proclaimed him king, and Jehoiada and his sons anointed him. That would have been with the holy anointing oil, which would smell heavily of cinnamon, if you want to kind of add that dimension to our imagination. And they all shouted out, "Long live the king!" At this point, I want to swap over to 2 Kings 11. Actually, we don't have to. Never mind. We can stay in 2 Chronicles. It's fine. I thought that we'd have a little bit more detail over there, but I think it's about the same. So 2 Chronicles 23:12, when Athaliah heard the noise of the people running and praising the king, because her palace is the Solomonic palace, is just slightly down the slope to the south. And so she would have heard all of this ruckus going on next door. And so she hears it, and she went into the house of he who is to the people. So she leaves the palace with her entourage, goes into the Temple Mount, and this is what she sees. When she looked, there was the king standing by his pillar at the entrance. Now that is one of the two pillars in front of the temple building. The big entry tower had underneath it two bronze pillars that Solomon had built at the direction and design of David. One was named Yakin, the other was named Boaz. And when you put their names together, it means he shall establish in strength. And there's indication here and in other places that when kings took their oath of office, if you will, they stood next to these pillars, probably closer to one than the other, and that phrase kind of represented the reality of their coronation. He shall be established in strength, that is, in the strength of the Lord. And so Athaliah comes into the temple complex. She goes up the steps, apparently, to this worship platform, and she sees beyond the altar of sacrifice a little bitty boy standing among the leaders of Israel with the high priest there, and he's holding the word of God, and he has a crown on his head, and he's right next to the pillar of coronation, and she realizes instantly what's going on. So when she looked, there was the king standing by his pillar at the entrance, and the captains, and the trumpeters beside the king, and all the people of the land rejoicing and blowing trumpets, and the singers with their musical instruments leading in the celebration. So we got music everywhere. The people down in the lower courtyard are all praising and celebrating and shouting out, "Long live the king." They're clapping their hands in applause. And what does the usurper queen do? Athaliah tore her clothes and cried, "Treason! Treason!" So she knows that she's in trouble. She accuses them of being the usurpers, but in fact, it is definitely her. And so Jehoiada the priest brought out the captains who were set over the army. Remember, he talked to them earlier, saying to them, "Bring her out between the ranks, and anyone who follows her is to be put to death with the sword." So arrest her, escort her out of this holy area. And anybody that's on her side, take them into custody as well. They are all to be executed as traitors. For the priest said, "Do not put her to death in the house of he who is." Do not execute her here. You take her elsewhere. Verse 15, so they laid hands on her, and she went into the entrance of the horse gate of the king's house, and they put her to death there. Now, the way that Solomon built up his royal complex is that the temple is at the top of the area that we call the Temple Mount today. In fact, where the golden dome of the rock is located now, that's where Solomon's temple probably had been located. And so a little bit south of there would have been the wall, the south wall of the temple complex, and there would have been a gate that then led into the royal complex. There would have been stairs going down, and on the west side of those stairs would have been the palace of Solomon, and now the royal palace of the Solomonic kings. And then on the east side of this descending stairway would have been probably the house of the forests of Lebanon. And then there would have been more stairs going down between these places toward the old city of Jerusalem, the city of David. And somewhere off to the east, behind the royal complex, on the wall that connected the east wall of the temple complex with the northeast corner of the city of David, the ancient city of David, there would have been a gate next to the horse stables and the chariot barn, the place where they kept everything used for mounted royal activities. And that was called the Horse Gate. It's somewhere in the approximate area of the southeast corner of the Temple Mount today, somewhere in that general vicinity. And so they take her to that area, which has a lot of horses and things, and they execute her there. And so that's the way that her illegitimate reign ends. And this is what happens next. Verse 16. Jehoiada made a covenant between himself and all the people and the king that they should be he who is his people. So now it's time to put things the way they're supposed to be. Then all the people went to the house of Baal, and they tore it down, his altars and his images they broke in pieces, and they killed Matan, the priest of Baal, before the altars. Now you might remember that when Ahab and Jezebel came to power in northern Israel, the capital city there was the city of Samaria, and immediately they built a major worship complex to their god and goddess pair, Baal and Asherah. Well, when Jehu came to power just a few years ago now, by our story today, he and his people destroyed the temple of Baal and Asherah in the capital city of Samaria. Meanwhile, down here in Judah, Athaliah had a temple to Baal and presumably Asherah built in Jerusalem. We don't know where, but she had it built because her worship was to Baal and Asherah. And so because she's been in control and using her power these last 7 years or 6 years, she has forced people to allow that to go on. Well, now that she's gone and the true Davidic king, the true Solomonic king is on the throne, all of that's going to end. So they trash the images, they tear down the complex, they execute the pet priest of Athaliah, who's in charge of giving the sacrifices to Baal and Asherah in that site. Verse 18, Jehoiada posted watchmen for the house of he who is under the direction of the Levitical priests and the Levites, whom David had organized to be in charge of the house of he who is, to offer burnt offerings to he who is, as it is written in the law of Moses, with rejoicing and with singing, according to the order of David. So I get the impression that because of Athaliah's devotion to Baal and Asherah, that what had been going on the Temple Mount in honor of he who is the true and living God had been kind of scaled back, that it had become secondary. She kind of, Athaliah probably tolerated it just because a bunch of her people believed in that God as well as in Baal and Asherah, But it wasn't a big deal until now, when everything is put back in place the way it's supposed to be. And so Jehoiada, the high priest, is doing this on behalf of his nephew, the young king. And he's only 7 years old, remember. And so they did all that. And verse 19, he stationed the gatekeepers at the gates of the house of he who is, so that no one should enter it who is any way unclean. The gatekeepers were in charge of not just simply physical security, but they were also in charge of monitoring spiritual security to make sure that only the authorized people should be entering into the worship areas. In verse 20, he then took the captains, the nobles, the governors of the people, all the people of the land, and they brought the king down from the house of he who is, marching through the upper gate to the king's house, and they set the king on the royal throne. Now, my guess is that somewhere here they probably visited the spring of Gihon, which was a coronation site in other coronations of the house of David. But eventually they end up going to the Solomonic Palace. And you may remember the description of the throne. It was an ivory throne covered in gold, and it had six steps that went up to the dais. And on each step, on each end of the step, there was a full-size gold lion representing the 12 tribes of Israel, no doubt. And so they take him and they put him on that throne as their new king. And so they set the king on the royal throne. And so all the people of the land rejoiced, and the city was quiet after Athaliah had been put to death with the sword. And so everything now is back to where it should be in southern Judah. That was in 846 BC. Now, during the next several years, 845, 844, 843, some other things happen to change things for the northern kingdom of Israel, where Jehu is in control. And to get that story, we've got to go back to 2 Kings chapter number 8. 2 Kings chapter number 8, and we'll pick up at verse number 7. Now, Elisha, so here's our heroic prophet to the northern kingdom of Israel, came to Damascus. Now, Damascus is the capital city of Syria, sometimes referred to by the old-fashioned term Aram. Elisha comes to the capital city of Israel's northern neighbor. Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria, was sick. He's been in control for a couple of decades now, I think, and he's caused quite a bit of trouble for Israel during that time, and he should have been gone by now. Two things should be noted. One, Elijah was supposed to go and anoint Hazael to become the new king of Syria during his ministry, and he never got around to it. And so that was one opportunity that didn't take place to get rid of this guy. And the other one was King Ahab had the chance to take Ben-Hadad out, and instead he made a peace treaty with him, and he got in trouble over that. And so those were two opportunities to get rid of this guy, and neither one of them happened. And so he's caused a lot of trouble, but now he's sick. The verse continues, when it was told him, the man of God has come here. So he's aware of this guy. He knows that he provided inside prophetic information to the Israelis on a couple occasions that kept Ben-Hadad from being successful in military operations against northern Israel. So he hears that this very powerful prophet is in Damascus. So the king sent Hazael, his right-hand guy, his top military commander. He says, take a present with you. You go and meet the man of God and inquire of he who is, that is Yahweh. Ben-Hadad is well aware of the Israeli God and thinks of him as very powerful. And so he figures maybe he should see if that God might be able to give him some information. So inquire of he who is through him, saying, shall I recover from this sickness? So Hazael went to meet him and took a present with him, all kinds of goods of Damascus, 40 camel loads. Think about that. That's a lot of stuff being offered to the prophet Elisha for information. When he came and stood before him, he said, your son Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, has sent me to you, saying, shall I recover from this sickness? So he uses this formal language of respect for a very powerful spirit-connected being, like a prophet. Your servant, your son Ben-Hadad, wants to know, is he going to get better? Elisha said to him, go. You're going to say to him, you shall surely recover. But he who is has shown me that he shall surely die. Now, listen to those words. Pay attention to the nuances here. He tells Hazael, yeah, you're going to go and tell him that he's going to recover. But I'm telling you that God told me already he's not going to recover. And then he fixed his gaze and stared at him. He just locks eyes with Hazael and doesn't say another word until he was embarrassed. That is, until Hazael blinked, he became super, super uncomfortable looking into the eyes of this silent prophet who told him, yeah, you can tell your boss that he'll recover, but he won't. And the reason he's not is because Hazael's going to kill him. Hazael's going to murder him. And then the man of God wept. Elisha just starts crying, breaks down. And Hazael said, why does my Lord weep? And he answered, because I know the evil that you will do to the people of Israel. You will set on fire their fortresses. You will kill their young men with the sword. You will dash in pieces their little ones and rip open their pregnant women. So Elisha has had, or might be having right now, a prophetic vision of what Hazael is going to do once he murders his boss and takes over Syria. He's going to immediately attack Israel and take over a big chunk of it, and he will do it with great, unfeeling, hateful, murderous force. Now, Hazael says back to him, what is your servant who's but a dog that he should do such a great thing? So he denies it, but I think he knows that he's already making plans that when his master is dead, that he will take over a large section of Israel. Elisha answered, he who is has shown me that you are to be king over Syria. And then that's the end of their conversation. Then he departed from Elisha and came to his master, who said to him, so what did Elisha say to you? And Hazael said, "He told me that you will surely recover." Exactly what the prophet said that he was going to tell him. But the next day, he took the bedcloth, he dipped it in water, spread it over his face till he died, and Hazael became king in his place. And so he murders this man who could have recovered, but didn't, so that Hazael could take over. And immediately, this is what he does, and this is where we'll end today. 2 Kings chapter number 10, starting at verse 32. I believe this happened within days after Hazael becoming the king of Syria. "In those days, he who is began to cut off parts of Israel. Hazael defeated them throughout the territory of Israel, from the Jordan eastward, all the land of Gilead, the Gadites, the Reubenites, and the Manassites, from Arior, which is by the valley of the Arnon, that is Gilead and Bashan." So basically, he takes his military forces, he pushes past Ramoth Gilead, which they controlled. He pushes farther south all the way down to the midline of the east side of the Dead Sea. And he murders Israelis all through there. Does exactly what Elisha said he would do. Killing kids and women, to stop Israeli women from giving birth, he cuts them open and lets them die and their little baby. And so he becomes the ruler of the entire eastern portion of northern Israel. Israel loses everything east of the Jordan to this man. But then a new power player comes on the scene.